Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hello, hello.
This is your co-host, Aaron Fitzpatrick, with
Brian DeMarco here at Roberta's on a actually very sunny but cold day.
Yeah, broadcasting live. It's the 6th of March.
What is it? What is this show? What number is this? 103?
This is the 102nd show.
102nd show.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So we're cruising.
Yeah, we're getting up there. You know, one of our guests today is 400 years old. He told me so. I can't wait to get in to talk to him. But I know that there's some interesting news that you had today.
Well, yeah. I mean, a couple different emails came in this morning with respect to New York wholesaling and how it may become illegal for New York wholesalers who have warehouses in New Jersey to distribute in New York. So,
well, this is really interesting because, I obviously this affects me as well.
And sure.
I have a very large warehouse in New Jersey filled with a lot of wine. And I've gotten no short of 20 emails in the last 2 days to write my congressman and otherwise to tell them to stop it. Is this, what's it exactly called? The drop ship? Or
I didn't catch that part, actually. Right,
well,
yeah.
The law is actually called the Let It Rest Law. And what happens is in the three-tier system, if you import wine or spirits, it has to, wherever it lands, it has to rest for 24 hours, and sometimes, in some cases, 48 hours, before you can resell it. So the state of New York, and let's start over. I mean, the basis for all this is taxes and tax revenue. And so you can be a New York State wholesaler. You can house your wines in New Jersey, and then you can sell the wines in New York State. And we, Barterhouse and Gotham Wine Group, we pay the taxes in New York, because we're assuming that we're making this revenue in New York City.
Right.
But technically, we owe New Jersey taxes because our wine is stored in New Jersey. So New York has caught on and decided that maybe this is a good idea for them. It will probably get resoundingly beaten down.
Like a long thing coming like this if it happens.
Yeah, but I mean, this could affect the entire wine industry in the Tri-State area.
Massively.
And it would be great for warehouse men in New York, but I think it would destroy business for a lot of people.
Well, it sounded like the only two companies which wouldn't be affected are the two largest companies that distribute wine. So, again, then it goes back to that, you know, monopoly of the giants.
Well, I mean, it would affect everyone, I think, in the short term dramatically, but I don't think that we couldn't move our wine to New York and house it in New York. It would affect, you know, a lot of people in New Jersey in terms of like the warehouse people and the storage of those wines, but this too shall pass, and we don't know whether it'll happen today or tomorrow, but I don't know. We've tried to get wines sold in not only in how we currently sell them, but in, you know, grocery stores and other sort of C-store chains, and that's been resoundingly beaten down as well. So, you know, everyone's afraid of the inevitable, but we'll see what happens.
We will see, yeah. So we're going to wrap up the week in wine with that, because we have some very special guests in town, and they're on a tight schedule, so we're going to introduce them and get talking. And welcome, Pete Van Leeuwenhorst from Holland. He is the master distiller of Bol Genever. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Good. And Tala Dari, who is a returning guest to Heritage Radio Network, who is behind the management of Lucas Bols in the U.S. So, welcome again.
Great being here again, guys.
Well, it's good to see you again, sir. I mean, you were in my office before, but I don't think I was there to actually witness you. So.
No, unfortunately not. But I must admit that this is one big improvement that I'm seeing here. I love your studio.
Yeah, well, good. You know, we it's humble on purpose. And this is basically, now it's become kitsch.
Yeah.
So tell us a little about the products you brought to us. And actually, maybe we should first start, good sir, with how the history of this product and how you came to be sitting here with us. So,
well, if you have several hours, I can tell you the whole history
the
of
Twitter version.
Lucas Bols. Lucas Bott started already producing Geneva in 1664.
Mm-hmm.
And we transported and we exported it all over the world. Although nowadays Geneva is hardly known in, mm-hmm. For example, in the US. And in 2008, we introduced the Bolt Geneva again, based on a recipe, which is quite exciting, based on a recipe dated 1820.
So it's a relaunch in essence.
It's more or less a relaunch. I have the recipe booklet over here. As you can see, it's written with a very fine handwriting. You can hardly read it, I think.
No, it's amazing. But this is Dutch, classic anal retentive Dutch. I love it.
It's Dutch.
Look at this. It's unbelievable.
You must guard that like your passport.
This is really nice. This,
I do.
Peter Stuyvesant used the same book with the same writing when he tried to do taxes in the early part when New York was a Dutch colony.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
And then, that looks reminiscent.
Yeah, exactly. Well, having said this, Bolt Geneva is now here in the States, and we have introduced it in several cities in 2008 and in 2009 in New York. We were in Los Angeles. We were in San Francisco, in Chicago, in Boston. So, and Tal is the big man over here to tell people how beautiful this product is.
Well, how was the product received, sir? So how was it received?
It's been amazing, especially amongst the cocktail crowd. You know, choosing the 1820 recipe was deliberate because we found out through history, reading the cocktail books that we see coming up since the 1862s, that Geneva was mentioned in those books.
Mm-hmm.
And so Pete got the challenge to say, okay, so what kind of Geneva must that have been that the American bartenders got? So then if you skip to today, last 5 years, let's say 10 years, classic cocktails are huge, and you can.
Well, it's a renaissance.
It's a renaissance. You everywhere you go. I say I can go to Dallas. I can go to Nashville, and you see the same thing happening that we already see in New York for many years. And therefore, the choice for the 1821. You know, we wanted to really have people recreate those cocktails from the past for today. Mm-hmm. And it's been amazing amongst the cocktail guys.
So this is the same exact recipe, and you've not modernized it in any way in terms of like the same, you know, content or the same spices and botanicals were available?
Well, to be honest with you, I think the processing is much more controlled than in those days.
Right.
So, but in basics, the grains we're using and the herbs are the same.
Mm-hmm.
Again, our processing is much more controlled. Mm-hmm. So the most important ingredient for Bolt Geneva is something which we call malt wine. And malt wine is very special distillate, which is only used in Geneva. And the speciality for this Bolt Geneva is that more than 50% of the liquid is based on this malt wine distillate.
Mm.
And this, the funny thing is that our malt wine is produced based on three types of grain: wheat, rye, and corn.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, with a little bit of malt to start the enzyme going, right, from the malt.
For fermentation, yeah.
From fermentation, because yeah, as you know, in grain there's no sugar. So you have to transfer the starch into fermentable, mm-hmm, sugars, otherwise you can't make any alcohol.
What, the yeast needs to eat something.
Exactly, right, exactly. As we all do, the yeast also needs something to eat.
So Aaron, does this sounds to me like it's Dutch moonshine.
Well, I think what I was going to actually interject, so that for people who've never heard of Geneva at all, like our good friend Tom, the bartender here at Roberta's, who will soon come to know it very well, it's been called the original gin or the original Dutch gin. So for those who haven't really ever tasted it, starting to get them to think about the certain botanicals that are used in gin are also likewise used in Geneva, but then you have that mulled wine, which certainly gives it a different flair. So is it fair to say that comparison, you know, exists, and it really gin looks to the original Geneva as influence?
No, I think you made the wrong comparison.
Okay.
So,
okay. All right.
I think Geneva is a category on its own.
Yeah.
And again, Geneva was copied by the English somewhere in 1800 and something. I don't know exactly the date. And what they did, they could not copy Geneva, so they made gin.
Mm-hmm.
Geneva was first, and then gin came.
Right.
The difference between a gin and a Geneva are the botanicals.
Of course.
Because in gin, you have a very strong juniper berry taste, lemon peel.
Gin is just vodka with juniper and some spices. Yeah.
Yeah, some spices like lemon peels and coriander. While the herbal accent of Geneva is much more lower than in gin. So, sorry to say so, but you can hardly drink a gin straight as it is.
Right.
You have to mix it. But Geneva is perfect if you drink it straight.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good to have that clarification, though, because there are people who make that association quite easily between gin and Geneva.
And I'm sure some Englishmen would be very appalled to hear that this is not the first gin in terms of a category. As the U.S. brand manager, how do you find that when you have to categorize this, when people are looking to put this on a shelf, where do they put it in the bar?
Thank God we are seeing some store owners making little signs of Geneva next to the gin or next to their whiskeys. But you're right. I mean, most often they put it into the gin section because it's a juniper berry association. But I love what Brian said that, if we have to categorize it, it is white whiskey flavored with botanicals in a sense. And I say the first year, a lot of Americans told me, and here I was by myself saying, okay, so you got the original gin. I was like, no. But I wasn't that patriotic in those days. So I was like, what? If you think that you can sell it that way, maybe. But after a year, I started to realize how people saw it. And the bartenders weren't using it as gin even. Like Pete said, you got people drinking it neat. And we found out that the word gin, especially on the consumer level, made a lot of confusion. Because what does a consumer that doesn't know a lot of drinks, they'll make a gin and tonic or a gin martini, hopefully, with it. And it's horrible. It's horrible. You cannot drink a Geneva martini, trust me, the way you make a gin martini. And so since we've been saying that, wait a minute, Geneva is Geneva, its own category. But if I have to talk about categories that you might know in America, think of it like white whiskey flavored with botanicals, or like flavored whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
Since that moment, the brand has been on fire because that's what people can at least relate to more, and then they can drink it the way we propose.
It has more delicacy as well, so you just have that.
Yeah, white whiskey's hot, though. Eh? That's the problem with a lot of people say white whiskey's hot, where the juniper and the botanicals in Geneva actually soften it down, which is very interesting.
I love how you've made What once was called moonshine, white whiskey. It's a white whiskey. The other white meat.
I'll give you one, which is exciting. I mean, you talk about history, Summer. We've talked about it. Someone did me a great favor. Sent me a bottle that's in the José Cuervo, sent me a label of a tequila bottle in the José Cuervo Museum. And it's one of the early Mexican, tequilas that came to the United States. You know, that was the brand name. You saw the label and it was the brand name. And then you said that it was underneath. You know what they said? They didn't say tequila. They said Mexican whiskey because tequila was not known. And so my Mexican friend said to me, Tal, one day, you don't have to explain it like unaged whiskey with botanicals. One day people will know it as Geneva, but give some time. Right. And so this is example use, which was quite funny and interesting.
So tell me about, unless Aaron's chomping over there, but I'm saying, tell me about the day part. Like, if you're talking about Martini Bianco, you understand it's a sunset. It's right after work. If you're talking about a Bloody Mary, you have a sense of when it should be drank. Prosecco, champagne, it all has a day part. Tell me about the day part for Geneva and when you think this is best consumed.
And especially the difference between people who are consuming it in Holland and how they consume it and how you see it being consumed in the U.S.
Pete, you want to talk about what they do at 5
Pete's,
o'clock in
Pete's
Holland?
Pete's consuming it all the time, so isn't fair for
what
him.
What do they do at 5 o'clock in Holland?
the thing what we do at 5 o'clock in Holland is drinking in Geneva. And the thing is, we have this bottle Geneva, as I told you, has a very high content of malt wine. But we have different categories in Holland. We have the so-called young Geneva with a very low amount of malt wine, and we have an old Geneva with about 20% of malt wine, so that makes the differences in taste. Some people like to have a Geneva from the refrigerator. Others drink it just as it is. But
what's your favorite way, Pete?
my favorite one, mm-hmm. my favorite one is just to have it as it is on room temperature, because I think at to have a drink at room temperature, you have the real flavor. Mm-hmm. And if you have it too cold and too mixed up, you're diluting the flavor. And I don't like that. That's that my seems personal
too,
view.
It's too fussy for you, right?
I like it as it is. That's the real thing. That's the real thing.
And what is the alcohol content in this?
Oh, it's 84 proof.
Okay, 84 so you, proof. Okay, so this you're is drinking. Not serious, yeah.
But Atal, what I'm so proud of is that although it's 84 proof, I have challenged many people while we were introducing this
it doesn't
liquid.
Taste hot.
Exactly. It's very smooth. It's very smooth. And we put something in it, and we call it our secret ingredient.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you, in the aftertaste, some tickles on your tongue.
What is it? Ground up Lipitor.
and that's what I like so much of this product. It gives you something, and you think, what is it? What's the taste? And you have this maltiness in the taste, and you want to have another nip.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
At least I do. At least I do.
So, just from an American point of view, then 5 o'clock, old fashions. Old fashioned with Geneva. You know, when he's talking about, you know, the beautiful character of Geneva, keep it in your drink. And so what we see currently, what is most talked about is our old fashions, Manhattans, starting mm-hmm. the night 5-6, starting with that. And that means really the old days. So we know that Geneva was sold on the East Coast in the 1800s, very simply like any cocktail would have been. Geneva, mm-hmm. sugar, bitters, and water or ice.
Mm-hmm.
And just do it like that. Don't muddle any oranges, cherries, whatever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Keep it there. Stir it like... And it's one of those drinks that it takes everyone away. And it's interesting, like you said, that you know it's actually the most popular drink when we sample it to consumers. Mm-hmm. That's the drink that most people love, because we also have a John Collins, which is a Collins recipe, mm-hmm. also from the 1800s, which is lemon juice, simple syrup, soda. And everyone can spice it up any way they want. That drink you can see in the summer moving mm-hmm. almost the whole day through. Mm-hmm. But it's funny that currently, especially old fashions, is...
Well, we're going to get on to the tasting part of this after all that nice build-up and take our own nip of this. So please join us for the second segment after this short break. Nice jam. Yeah. Welcome back. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com and Unfiltered.
You like that, Jack? You like you pulling that out of the...
Very nice.
So we're joined today with Tal Nadare of Lucas Bowls and Pete Van Leeuwenhorst.
That's Mr. Pete.
Mr. Pete. Yeah, let's just call you Mr. Pete, if that's okay. Yeah. Who's here from Holland. So we have a pleasure of your company today. And I wanted to begin this second segment with Cup Stoje.
Okay, so not only
Cup Stoje.
Not Cup Stoje, but not only did you bring me a tulip glass full of Dutch moonshine, you brought a little beer for me, and you have your little tray here, which is kind of cute. Like, explain this. How, is this so you can teach people how to drink it, or?
And this is the exciting part where Pete and I, you know, when we really started on this 3.5 years ago, we of course embraced the cocktail side of Geneva with this 1820 recipe. But Pete and I, and he's always, and I found always people who love Pete for it, for saying what he said: drink it neat on the rocks, do it like that. At the same time, though, his thought process or his ideas don't come from just anywhere. They come from Holland. And so what you see in front of you is a tulip glass of Geneva filled up to the rim, like fully, 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 with a beer next to it, the way we probably consume 70% of our Geneva in Holland. So that's where it comes from. Now, the only thing I did differently, and Pete, we were talking about just before the show, is that... we weren't sure about this, you know, as Dutch, what did we know about America and all of that? But thank God they sent me here, and I now live amongst the Americans, love the Americans, and I found out you have a shot and a beer culture.
Wait, you're not from Iran.
No.
The Dutch have been here for a long time. There's been a lot going on with the Dutch. I mean, come on.
So I was pleasantly surprised when these cocktail guys would say to me, Tal, so really, I'm reading about this thing, you know, Cup Stoje? What is that? You know, we got to try that. Mm-hmm. And so you find out that actually a lot of the guys who make the cocktails, they love just to sip on something nice and drink a beer with it. So here we go.
So Cup Stoje translates to what?
Little het butt.
Okay, so this is the overflowing tulip glass filled with Geneva. And that's sort of the expression.
Exactly.
It's a little headbutt.
It's really literally translated. Kop means head, stoot means butt. And then if you say chur, it's always little. So little headbutt. And I must admit, it's been catching on so fast. And it's just amazing to see. And Pete laughs at me always because he said in the beginning, people looked at me from Holland and said, Tal, why do you need so many tulip glasses? Like, guys, I'm working on something. Trust me. And so today, this is what we see.
So walk us through it so I can get my big headbutt on.
Yeah, so I poured it in front of you guys. We even took of it. No, you cannot touch with the hands, Brian.
Nope.
So that's always, you know.
You got to get low, get low.
Yeah, you got to get low, you got to bend, you got to get bent forward. The thing is, the bartender will pour it as close as possible on the side of the bar at your side. And so he will fill it up to the top. That's the way we do it in Holland. And the idea is that you first make sure that you slurp off the top, because otherwise if you would take it, it would spill over your hands. So you first slurp the top, and then you take the beer in your hand and you sip it away with the beer. Mm-hmm. That's the idea. And then we say Prost.
All right.
You have it in front. You can do it.
I was wondering if Mr. Pete wants to demonstrate.
Mr. Pete, you know what?
You want me to demonstrate?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Pete, right. You have to slurp.
You have to scoot your chair up a little bit closer to it.
Right,
okay. I don't want you to blow out a hamstring here.
Okay, here we go. He bends forward. And there,
visual,
so good.
He's
so
slurping good. Off the top.
He doesn't even need the beer.
That's
see
the
that?
Yeah, that's and then
the
that's the real. And then you can take the beer,
Aaron.
And Aaron.
Oh, well, she's a pro. Look at her.
She's a real pro. Yeah.
And that's what we do. Now Brian is going. Now I'll tell you one thing is interesting in Holland. We will drink this with the biggest beer brewers, you know, beer kind. So Heineken, Amstel, Pilsner style almost.
So tell us about this beer that we have here. Yeah,
I'm so excited that I could bring it to you. I have a mason jar with me from Philadelphia yesterday. What I did is I came to the United States, and one thing I learned, with all the respect to my fellow Dutch brewers, distillers, and all of that, I found out that what's going on way more exciting here in this world is craft brewing.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to do this this Kop Stoje with a more Dutch. I wanted to do what the Americans do. So there has been an amazing young guy called
Philly,
Brian Schomburg.
Yeah, Philly, Shipyard Brewery down there.
You know, no, there's really, all over the U.S., there's crazy things happening on brewing side. So Brian Stromke, Stillwater Artisanal Ale, I met him. He only brews for 3 years, I think, now. Last year, he was voted second best new brewer in the world. This guy, he's crazy. He makes amazing, beautiful saisons. I told him about this. We did it at a bar. He was like, I'm done. I'm going to make you a beer. I'm going to make us a beer that we will pair up specially with the Geneva. And
the only
thing he asked was the secret recipe from Pete. No, yes, he did ask for the big parts of the recipe, you know, how Geneva was made, because he wanted to make it accordingly. Mm-hmm. And so you're drinking his Stillwater Artisanal Kopstootje beer.
Oh, cool.
And nice. He released 30 barrels. First one is 30 barrels. And we have been, you know, going through a seven-city tour.
Wow. So how are you? Are they bottling it or are they just doing it in kegs?
No, so only kegs now. Okay. And I must admit, you have to ask Brian. I wish he was here, but it seems like it's going off so fast and so good that next one will be in maybe even in bottles. So it would be exciting.
Mm-hmm. That's
very
great.
Cool. Yeah. Well, this is delicious. Brian, have you had Geneva before?
I think I have. But yeah. It doesn't, you know, it kind of washes over me. Let me try it again.
That's a good thing. Try it again. I'm sure you'll love it.
Yeah, it has. It reminds me of everything, and then it reminds me of Geneva.
Love it.
You love the maltiness?
I do like the maltiness. I think that takes the edge off the heat, and it rounds.
Yeah, there's definitely a warming.
It rounds out the palate, and then you get that traditional botanical on the mid palate, and in the finish. You're getting a teeny bit of alcohol in the finish, but it's not like it's gin where you would never drink gin straight, because you would just get a burn. So I think this is interesting, and I would probably have this in that old fashioned you were talking about. I think that would be quite nice.
It's always funny to do it Manhattan, you know, Manhattans, people who drink Manhattans and then make it one with Geneva, they go like, no, no, no. And then they try and they go like, whoa.
Right. May I ask you a question? You know, now that you have tasted it, what do you think of the sharpness? And doesn't burn?
No, it doesn't.
I think it's very delicate. I think it has this like, it's a softness. There's a richness to it, but it's soft.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it has a nice mouthfeel. But yeah, it's easy to sip. I actually made a Bull's Geneva punch over the winter, which was really nice because when I think about this, you kind of have, you know, that like comforting feeling of drinking something spicy and warm, and this was a nice match with that. Yeah.
For those of us or the listeners that are interested in finding this product, well, give me a couple retailers here in the city that might have it, and the suggested retail price.
Yeah, so probably $7.50 would average between $29.99 and $34.99. Manhattan, probably Astor Wines, Broadway. I think on Broadway there's a huge spirit. I mean, mm-hmm. to be honest, now I think we're over 150 stores all around New York, even in Brooklyn, Queens, and all of that. You can see it's a Long Island.
So $30 average retail for
30. For yeah, 34. I would say for $7.50.
For a fifth.
Do you see restaurants in New York using these tulip glasses, or are they using similar something to like they would serve port in or something like that?
Yeah,
or?
That's exciting. It's funny that you said it. This is actually really something that is meant for more beer program kind of restaurants and all of that, and they love to use the glasses. But you know, we always try to provide these, and if not, you know, they use normal shot glasses. We don't see them suddenly use port glasses or something like that.
But you said you were providing some of these tulip glasses to key retailers. So,
yes.
So you're actually not only are you doing you're trying to sell the product. You're trying to you're selling the actual. You know, the way to drink it, and then giving them the accoutrement that goes with it. You know?
Yeah, I think in a brand like this, you must know now in an industry like ours,
of course.
It's America. I mean, we have so many brands coming up constantly. You got to make noise, and I think you know if you got to do it differently. And I think one thing we did very well, we had these wonderful gift bags with two of the glasses and Tales of the Cocktail. You talk about Tales of the Cocktail when it's occurring?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
So last year, for instance, we did a world record. We had 451 people lined up on the streets doing this simultaneously, drinking the headbutt, the Kopstootje.
Wow.
So I continuously do those things, and wherever I can, you know, I'll try. And that's the same with the Stillwater Project. It's amazing to see how much attention it draws to the brand and all of that. So,
did you make it to Tales, Mr. Pete, or no?
No. I wasn't there.
So how many times do you come to the U.S.?
Well, if Tal requested me to come over and to tell people how beautiful this drink is, I'll come.
Great.
And, let's say two, three times a year.
Wow.
You're always welcome back on our show.
Thank you very much.
And it gives you a reason to come over to Brooklyn. And
give me a reason to help you drinking Geneva. Right,
besides going shopping here with, I'm sure that's on the list as well.
Absolutely.
So tonight, are you doing a trade event at Van Dog, the cocktail restaurant?
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. We do.
Yeah, we found six cities. And we started last week in New Orleans, went to Baltimore, D.C., Yesterday in Philly, today and tomorrow in New York. So today at Vandaag,
so
in the East Village.
East Coast tour, Vandaag, yeah.
Yeah, Alewife Queens tomorrow. And so we launched the beer. Brian, the creator of the beer, will be there. And then we move on to Boston, Chicago.
Excellent.
All right. Yeah, so tell again for our listeners where tonight that you can be found with this product.
And well, it's for trade. So
it's for trade.
It's open. The restaurant's open.
Oh, okay.
I would never say no, especially not after tonight, after today. I love this. So if they want 6 to 8 Vandaag, it's on 2nd Avenue. Ooh,
Second
I have
Avenue.
To be careful.
Yep, it is 2nd Avenue.
East Village and I think 5th or 60th corner. 6 to 8, and they, by the way, they have it on tap. They have it anyway. The kopstootje they do every day, so everyone can try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. So maybe we'll stop by there. You can catch us, the Unfiltered Crew, or maybe we'll be down at the 5th Avenue.
No, Jax Jones in for a little Vandaag action.
I don't think I can get Jack out of Bushwick, but maybe. All right, so 2nd Avenue and 5th Street, we'll be down there tonight. Anyway, this is great stuff, guys. I really appreciate it. And this beer is interesting. I would love to have a whole different topic about this.
But, he would come. He knows a couple of the guys, I think, of the radio in general. So
oh, good,
Brian
yeah.
knows about
we have
you.
A beer show after this, but it's not ours. But,
okay, yeah. Okay.
But I'll let Aaron
part of the family.
I'll
though.
Let Aaron take us out.
Well, Pete, so nice to have you here. Thanks for joining. Tal Nadare, Lucas Bowles, and we're going to sign off today. Find Geneva at your local store and mix it up with a nice cocktail classic, or just drink it neat like Pete does.
Mr. Pete.
Exactly.
The master
right,
distiller.
Thank you, guys.
Cheers.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.